Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. This is a show about love letters, and we've been doing it for quite some time with the hopes of encouraging other people to write love letters to anybody for any reason at any time. And I think we're just going to go right to it.
Sure. Every week we have a terrific guest, and who is it today?
Our guest today is Don Kahn, a San Franciscan, and I'm going to turn it right over to you to say hello, and then we're going to start talking about your story.
Hello, Janet. I am Don Kahn, but if I say I'm Herb Wilczek, it's because he told me he'd give me a dollar if I mentioned his name.
Perfect. Okay, he owes you.
Yes.
Okay, in front of everybody listening.
Right.
Well, I hope he's listed.
Okay, he will be. Okay, so let me ask you. You talked about a really beautiful, interesting story about your father, and I think what led me to say I think there's a love letter here is the look in your face. Talk about your parents for a minute and growing up and what kind of man your father was, and then tell us that story.
Well, it's a really it really is a love letter. When you told me writing a love letter to my father, that sounded a little strange, or my mom.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the only child, the first child in my family, and my mother had one brother, and my father had one sister, and none of them had any children. So I was really very spoiled. And none of my mother and dad's friends had children. They were very young when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went everywhere with them, and my dad supposedly started in business on his own with my mom as his assistant. The story I'm told is that he started on the day I was born, and he started in the neighborhood of South Park Street in San Francisco. And since I'm a native San Franciscan and around South Park a lot to this day, I have kind of a love story about the way I was raised. I was very fortunate.
Tell us about that.
Well, my mom and dad had gone into business at South Park Street, and my dad had a very small warehouse, and in those days people did not have nannies, babysitters, etc. So I used to go with them every day. They would take me to work while they worked in this little warehouse that they rented, and I played in South Park Street, and this was from 1935 until the war broke out. When the war broke out, my dad, just before the war, bought the first house anybody in our family had ever bought. So that was in November of 1941.
How old were you then?
I was six. And I think I was six or five.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a child. It's a young
between.
Boy. I understand.
And we were all very excited. My grandparents were very proud. And then the war broke out. This warehouse that my dad had been renting on South Park Street was a very mixed ethnic neighborhood. The building that my dad rented was a Japanese hotel that was owned by a Japanese family. Next door was a Filipino hotel that was owned by a Filipino family. And they were beautiful old places that had been used as, I guess, guest houses when people first came off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Down on the Embarcadero, and where my dad's warehouse was, next door was a paint contractor by the name of Dewey Mead. I always remembered him because he was a supervisor of San Francisco, and he had only one job. That was to paint the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow.
And his company used to paint the bridge all the time. They'd start painting one end of the block.
Yeah.
And to me, as a six-year-old kid, that was kind of exciting to watch this guy paint.
And as an adult, you can see that's quite a contract to have.
That's something that most of our supervisors today would like to get, I'm sure. They probably have a little part of it to begin with. Anyhow, when the war broke out, the people that own the hotel, and I think their name, I've really thought about the story much more since I first talked to you, Janet.
Mm-hmm.
The people that own the hotel, I believe their name was Marino. and they had been several generations of Japanese family here, were taken to Tamforan Racetrack as an internment camp. And it was very hard for me to understand because there was all these stories about collaborating with the enemy and whatever. For a six-year-old, these tales were monumental. We had blackouts in the city. And
But especially probably hard to understand when these people were your friends and neighbors.
We played with them all the time.
Yes.
So I did anyhow. They were very cute to me. There was nobody else when I say they. So, but my dad had this house, and they said to him that we're very worried about our future, and we'd like you to buy the building. And because my dad had just bought this house, he had no money at all. So they decided that they would lend him the money. I did not know this story.
Who would lend him the money?
The Marino family.
Oh.
They would lend him $500 to act as a down payment. And then he would pay them back in some form of a mortgage. The story is very hazy because it wasn't told to me at the time. But what I most remembered was that on the weekends, whatever money came in from the hotel, I didn't know why, but my dad would drive down to the Tamforan racetrack. Mm-hmm. And the Marinos would come up to the fence.
They were prisoners.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if they were prisoners. I don't know what they called it. You know,
right.
I'm telling you, since I told the story.
I don't think they called them prisoners, but yeah, okay.
But in fact, they were, because if you're confined and you can't leave, you're a prisoner, right?
They were confined.
So Tamforan was turned into an internment camp.
Yes.
It had
been a racehorse. It's now a shopping center.
Right.
And my dad used to take this money and push it through the fence. Well, the story that my friends, I would tell my friends what I did that week. And my friends would say to me, your father's a spy.
Oh.
Or something's going on. And I knew he wasn't, you know, but I didn't know what we were about. I just didn't know what was happening. Shortly after that, they moved all the people from Tanforan up to Tuolumne. And because there was gas rationing and we couldn't get there once a week, my father, we would take the Greyhound bus.
Oh, my goodness.
And we would go once a month, and I would go on. And that was a real big outing. I almost didn't care that he was a spy because we would get a whole day to travel and we'd go on the bus and he would
must have been
up.
Beautiful up there.
Yeah, although I do remember the fog. I remember that fog like it was the movie Great Expectations. Did you ever see that?
No.
Well, the first movie of Great Expectations, you see this misty fog coming along. Anyhow,
but how shocking that is, really, when you think back. My goodness. Go ahead.
It was still unknown to me why we were doing this. In the interim period of time, my dad, the neighborhood, the Japanese tourists coming to the hotel totally ended. There was no business at all. The government came to my dad and said, we need housing here, and we're going to confiscate your hotel. We're not going to take it away from you. We're going to rent it from you. But what we're going to do is we're going to remodel this hotel and turn it into a place where apartments can be rented for shipyard workers. And they did it. The hotel was really beautiful. It was, I'm not a real aesthetic person, but it was Soji screens and all this kind of stuff.
Before they got their hands on it.
Before they got their hands on it. And they tore everything out. And replaced it with, I guess they made like four apartments, at the maybe five at the most.
And this was the Marino's apartment, or house.
It was the Marino's hotel.
Hotel, I mean, yes, yeah. Not where you were living.
It's not our house.
Right.
It's Marino's hotel. It's my father's warehouse.
Right.
It's downstairs. So then my father would get this check from the government. He did not rent it to people. The government just took it over and they would rent it. And I know he cashed it. Mm-hmm. And I know that we took the money up to the Marinos every month. Well, the war finally ended, and the Marinos came back to town.
Mm-hmm.
And my father went to give them back the hotel. This mm-hmm. is, again, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's told me what has happened, and my father went and gave them back this hotel, their hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't accept it. They said to him, Zell, you're the only friend that we had, and you saved us, and they wouldn't accept it back.
Where did they go?
They stayed in San Francisco.
Just lived somewhere else.
Well, they never lived there. They I believe they lived in the Richmond district. And
but then, meanwhile, they had piled up this money that they had when they came out.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
They opened up the family opened up a grocery store on Post Street, which I think is still there, across from what we call Japantown now, which is probably where their roots were. I think they're very successful.
This family still.
Yes. But my dad did not, he really didn't want to keep the place. It had become, South Park had become very dangerous at that time. It was Needle Park,
mm-hmm.
San Francisco's
mm-hmm.
version of Needle Park. So he put it up for auction, and it was sold. And the building is still there, and I park there by it all the time.
Don't you wish you had it now?
The South Park Cafe
yes.
Is in the building.
Wow.
Okay,
next time I go by there, I'm going to take a whole new look at that
and
area.
And if you look at the little staircase that goes upstairs, that's where the Japanese hotel was, upstairs.
Okay.
And it... after my dad passed away, I took my mom there once for dinner, and I said to her, hey, Mom, do you know where we are? She looked around, and I think that's when I decided I wanted to write a love letter
okay,
to them.
Okay, so this is a perfect time.
Just to remind our listeners
yes.
that this is Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time talking to fabulous guests about their stories and the love letters they want to write.
Okay, so I have something to say about this. This is, you have a father who was quietly heroic, right?
I think so.
Yes. I mean, from what you've said, I'm just welling up with tears at that one sentence when they said, Zell was our only friend. That is a whole history right there. And the fact that you're going to do this love letter and not let it go with you, this information, you're the last person who has this information. And that you're not going to take it with you when you go is really important, I think. So you're going to write the love letter. Now, your dad's no longer here. And even though it's a love letter to your dad or about your dad, how are we going to do this?
Well, what I think I've told my children.
This story.
This story. And I want them to know... I'm not quite sure what the moral lesson is, but to do the right thing.
Yes, and the moral lesson is, I think the gift for them is you come from something heroic. You know, children like to look back at their parents and grandparents and ancestry and know it's a gift to know there was something glorious there, I think.
I think you're right, you know, and I
it's a gift to your children.
I had a whole lot of love letters that I could have written to a lot of people who I really appreciate.
Well, you say could have. You're still here.
Yeah, I'm going to write some
okay,
love letters.
Good.
However, when you talked to me about this, this was something that I really wanted my kids to know.
Mm-hmm.
I think you put it real well, that I want them to know that you don't have to be stand up in the whole world to do something really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that the story that I've told myself for
mm-hmm.
65 years is accurate.
Well, you witnessed what you witnessed.
Yeah.
And it went in.
It's very accurate to me.
Right. And that's important. And by the way, even if you, I think, miss a couple of points in a love letter, you know, this isn't a government hearing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a love letter. And you can always say, I hope I remember this accurately.
I did.
Right. Uh-huh. And the beautiful part to me there is that with that memory comes the love you have for him and the respect you have for him.
And my mom.
Of course.
Let me tell you that they were partners.
Yes.
And I think that the love letter that I'm writing is to thank them for letting me be who I am and growing, being raised by them. So if you can help me put that into a letter.
We're going to do that.
Then that's
But something else, I thought you were going to say you wanted to thank them for letting you be part of this historically important heroism. Mm-hmm. They took you with you. They took you with them to Tuolumne. You got to be witness to it, to doing the right thing.
Well, that was part of my parents raising me. We did everything together. I don't know if that was a matter of necessity, which it might have been, because they sure didn't explain this to me until many, many years afterwards when we went to the Marino's grocery store.
Uh-huh.
And my dad told me the story of why he had done this.
So he was very modest in a way. He was doing the right thing. He was modeling the right things, but he wasn't bragging about it.
I don't even know that he knew that what he was doing. He just instinctively did something that turned out to be very, very honest and
Well, obviously,
forthright.
He's a person of high integrity, and he couldn't have done any differently.
And look at the strength you had. I mean, you have that smile when you said that other kids told you your dad was a spy.
That was funny.
That was funny, but you know, in a grammar school, when kids can be so brutal, you were comfortable with what they were doing. You knew that they were good.
Yeah,
you didn't have to take in
good.
That slur, as kids sometimes do.
I knew that they weren't doing anything wrong.
Right.
They would not do that.
Right. So that's another gift.
Yeah.
You knew they wouldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that is you knew they would be doing the right thing.
Yep. So that was my story about, and now we go to South Park all the time because that's where the Giants play baseball.
Yes. I used to go there a lot and meet my daughter for coffee at El Centro in South Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was our favorite place to meet for coffee in the morning. And I just had no idea that South Park had this history. I'm so grateful to listen to this.
El Centro is was the Filipino hotel.
See, who knew these things?
And
if
you look across the park side of El Centro, I think it's Stillwell Street, you'll see that there's a Filipino Masonic temple. It's still there. And the reason it's there was because this was the Filipino, community center. And I don't think Filipinos could be Masons unless they had their own.
Do you know what I think? If you write, I mean, this could be pages long, but you should do it. And maybe even, will you? This is so nifty.
Right.
What I'm thinking is if you do all this, I mean, just the El Centro was the this and the Filipino hotel. How interesting that is, and that your grandchildren have a part in this. I think that's such a gift. And then to say even at the end, I'm telling you all this. This is really a love letter to my parents for what they were and what they did. And it's a love letter to you because I want you to know what you come from.
Well, that would really be nice. You know, I started...
this history is your history.
A couple of years ago to go to the Fromm Institute.
Uh-huh.
And I took a course in writing here,
and
I really loved it, but I couldn't shut up.
You'd be in a room by yourself with a paper and pencil. You don't have to shut up.
Yeah.
You know, Janet, you mentioned how he should end the letter very eloquently, but might that also be how he begins the letter?
Because either way,
I'm wondering how you start a letter to your grandchildren about something about your heritage.
Oh, okay, that's a good question. Either way. But I was thinking I was going to ask you, actually. You could say, Dear Mom and Dad, I want to write you this letter because I want you to know, now that I'm 66 years old, or however old you are.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Now that, whatever age I am, I look back and I can see what you were. I can see who you were. And just write it to them. And then say, and even though I'm writing this letter to you, I'm going to be sending it to my grandchildren because I want them to know who you were. The love letter's to you, but I'm sending it to them because your history is their history. Something like that. Is that what you're...
Yes,
And then still end it with, I'm telling you all this because I love them so much and I love you so much and I want you all to know.
You know, this is very nice. I hope you don't make me cry, guys.
It's okay if you do. We've cried. This is, and it'll take some time, by the way. This can't be something that you do probably in one afternoon.
No, I don't.
You don't
want to
rush yourself. You want to give yourself the luxury of taking all the time you need. And if it takes you a week, if you spend, I know you got some time to spend, right?
Absolutely.
You can hole up in your office and you can just fill one of these legal tablets with everything you remember, as you've just told us, and more, the history of South Park.
I could do the whole history of San Francisco.
Do whatever you can, in as much as it relates to your family, but the centerpiece should be their heroism with this Japanese family. And then write it as a letter. Once you get all your thoughts down, just put it in a dear...
I'm trying
Mom and
real
Dad.
Hard not,
okay.
not to just nod yes, because I know we're on the radio. But
oh, you can't nod. You have to say something,
yeah,
right?
but I think that would really be fun for me and really good for me. And I think it would be really good. I recently, someone gave me the oral history mm-hmm. of Saul Friedman. And I don't know if you ever knew him.
Very well.
Well, I knew him, but... Until I read his oral history, I did not know him.
His daughter's one of my best friends and was my first roommate at college, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I did until I read this book.
Well, you do it. You have the time to do it. You have the most wonderful way of telling a story, I think.
Well,
and
thank
if you.
You
don't change a thing, however it comes out of your mouth, put it down. A good letter is right out of your, from your heart out your mouth onto the paper. Just like that.
Well,
okay.
I think I'll do it.
Okay.
I think I will do it. Yeah. You can help me.
I will. Yeah. I'd be happy to. This is such a big one.
Good.
I think when there's a family history like this, the gift goes 40 ways from center.
Mm-hmm.
And can I have a copy of it?
Absolutely.
I've never asked that before, but I would like to have that South Park.
Absolutely.
San Francisco history. Part.
Absolutely.
It's so important to write things down. You can tell these stories to your grandchildren, but they're going to, the next time they retell it, they're going to tell it in their own way.
Right.
They're going to leave things out. They're going to maybe add things that weren't there. So this becomes really the truth put
right.
to paper.
And your handwriting, by the way, and when your great-great-grandchildren find this, you're all gone. We're all gone. Nobody's here. That's going to be what they have.
You know, I think you're really right, because I know that I've told this story to a lot of people, because a lot of people, the person that my dad eventually sold South Park Street to when it was auctioned off is still living and still sits there. He's kind of a recluse guy,
mm-hmm.
and he has a no parking sign, and he makes sure that he's there so that nobody would dare park in his driveway. But I had a conversation with him the other day, and a lot of people have tried to take over this. The area is very shishi now. So a lot of people
yes.
have made him offers and wanted to do things. And he's kind of a hermit kind of guy. And he just sits there. But he took me in when he heard my dad's name, which mm-hmm. he didn't know, but he had seen it on the tracking of the title papers, and he knew that I had a story to tell. And every time I tell the story, you're right, I should write it down, because I embellish it, let alone my grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
or I de-embellish it. I'm not even sure that I told everything that I have to tell about the story today on the air. But
well, for the sake of love letters, which is what we're doing here, mm-hmm. you've got so much material, and I know how much you love your family because I've known you for so many years. So you want that left behind you.
Yeah, I'll do it.
By the way, not only left behind you, you'll get the joy of seeing their receiving it now.
Might even be a bestseller.
You never know. You could. Okay.
Do you write other love letters?
Well, I took this one course at the Fromm Institute,
mm-hmm.
Where I wrote some short stories.
Good for you.
And I enjoyed it a lot. And back when I was at high school, the Call Bulletin newspaper
yes.
gave me $100 to go as a journalism scholarship
to
UC, but I didn't.
Okay, well, you certainly got the spark.
I got the, yeah, I like to talk and write.
Okay, well, that's just beautiful. So you'll do that, and, sure. You know, it's never too late in life to take yet another turn. Maybe you'll do more of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Did you spend your career?
I was in the liquidation and closeout business, mm-hmm. And I just bought and sold merchandise and did okay, mm-hmm. I think.
So writing wasn't a big part of your
not
business?
At all.
Okay.
Not
but,
at all.
But, you know, there's another thing that I happen to know about your family that you didn't mention because it's not part of this story, but that they were very philanthropic. I mean, this story is philanthropy. But, you know, I knew that they were involved in other ways in community. You might want to include that in here for your children and grandchildren, rather.
Oh, in the whole book, sure.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Why not?
Okay, you've got a book in you.
Yeah.
Well, Janet.
Yes.
If someone's inspired to write a love letter after listening to this program,
mm-hmm.
how do they do that? What's the best way to start?
Okay, well, I think the best way to start, and I'll say it to you, is what we just said. Just give yourself 3 or 4 days, you know, a couple of hours a day, however much you want. And I must say there's quite a luxury in shutting out the world and just leaving yourself with your own thoughts, no TV going, no Herbie Wilczek on the phone, no nothing, just quiet, just you and your thoughts and a pad and paper, and start writing absolutely everything you remember and get it all down. Try to do it chronologically because it's easier, like start with your own earliest memories and just write it down and write it down and write it down and then look it over. Some things will be accurate. Some things you'll say, well, I didn't really feel this. It was more like that. And one of the great things about a love letter that you can't do on a telephone or an email is you can look at what you've written and see if it's true, what you really meant to say. And you don't ever want to change anything to be false, but you do want to change it to be the most accurately true indication of how you feel. And then just start from there. And then finally take all those notes. It can be, you know, 2 pages or 50 pages, and go through it and see what part of that goes in this love letter. And maybe the rest you save for something else.
Well, that sounds like a really a good program. You should teach a writing course.
Well,
maybe that was it.
Thank you very much. We do.
Actually, we do. We do a love letters workshop.
Wow.
Where we do just this. I mean, it's a 3-hour workshop. And we leave that workshop. It's not a philosophical thing. We leave that workshop with a letter in a hand, and we stick it in the mailbox.
Wow.
But so all this goes into it. I'm glad you said that.
So it doesn't have to take weeks.
No.
Good love letter can take, you know, an hour.
Right. And, you know, when you talk about a good love letter, this is a good love letter that needs to be long because it's got a particular historical, wonderful story. But some letters are really short. I got one from Teresa after I went for a medical checkup, and it just said, "Dear Janet." Oh, it just said, "Yay, love Teresa." It was one word, and it was certainly a love letter.
Hey, maybe I'd like to go to your workshop. Where do you
do
that?
Well, we'll talk about that.
All right.
You'd be good. We'd love to have you in it. You'd be great.
Well, I want to find out if I should tell Herb Wilczek he has to give you $1 or $2 for mentioning his name.
I think he should.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. It's unfortunately, our half hour is up. It's time to remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We hope you'll be with us every week. And please go to our website, www.loveletterslive.com. You can catch past programs if you haven't been able to listen to them all. And you can contact us with questions for Janet or anything that you'd like to share. If you're in the Bay Area and you'd like to appear on the show.
Or if you want to let Don know anything that he may not have said about South Park or any of his own history, if you want to add to it. You can email us, and we'll forward it to him.
Right. So, until next time, we thank you for joining us and hope you'll tune in every time this week. We encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Right. And please remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is that special occasion.
So, till next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.
Bye.